You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, folks. A few quick announcements. We finally managed to acquire the domain kickassnews.com, so that's going to be the location of the new website. You'll still be able to reach us at the old address, though, but if you want to link to us or share the website with friends, be sure to use kickassnews.com. And the new listener email is going to be comments@kickassnews.com from now on. Also, I hope you'll do two things for me this week. Recommend Kick-Ass News to two of your friends and encourage them to listen and subscribe. I want to make a big push to grow our listenership over the next month, and with your help, we'll do that. Just share it with two of your friends. One more thing, if you're so inclined, support what I'm doing here by making a donation to GoFundMe.com/Kick-Ass News. Thanks again for listening, and now enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. As we've discussed before, the world is getting smaller and smaller by the day. Thanks to cheap airfares and innovations like Airbnb, today's generation travels more than the previous generations ever dreamed. Today, there's no corner of the world that's truly inaccessible, and the booming ecotourism industry has made weekend adventures out of far-flung destinations once only seen in the pages of National Geographic. There are now countless travel magazines, cable networks, websites, and guidebooks, from old reliables like the Fudor's Guide to hipster guidebooks like 1001 Places to See Before You Die, that inspire endless bucket lists and tell you everything you need to know before you even get there. But while I'm all in favor of travel goals, we've gotten a little carried away with the bucket lists, people. To-do lists are for chores and errands, not life-changing experiences. For too many people, travel has become less about the journey and living in the moment, and far too much about getting that perfect Machu Picchu selfie or showing off that you were brave enough to cuddle a doped-up tiger in Southeast Asia where animal rights aren't really a thing. Exploring the world is not about getting 100 likes on Instagram or the things you already knew. It's about what you discover along the way. Oftentimes, things that you never considered or even knew could exist, and it's hard to be surprised if you're too busy checking off a list. In an age where everything seems to have been explored and cataloged, and there's nothing new to be found, AtlasObscura.com revels in the weird, the unexpected, the overlooked, the hidden, and the mysterious, curated from submissions sent in by a community of explorers all over the globe. The website is part Anthony Bourdain and part Ripley's Believe It or Not, with articles, strange facts, and travel tips about the world's hidden wonders. From the independent principality of Sealandia, established by a man and his family on an abandoned oil platform off the coast of England, to a fiery crater that's been burning in the deserts of Turkmenistan since 1971. How about a pub that seats 12 inside the trunk of a tree in South Africa? Or a group of Japanese monks who go through an excruciating 10-year process of self-mummification. There's the man who spent the past 25 years hand-carving a labyrinth of ornate cathedral-like caves in the sandstone hills of New Mexico, and a Hindu temple in India inhabited by 20,000 rats, where it's considered good luck if one of the vermin nibbles on your toes. Atlas Obscura even has many tours and monthly field trips exploring the funkiest secret attractions in major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago. It's all the brainchild of two friends, Joshua Foer and Dylan Thuris, who founded the website in 2009 to share their wanderlust for the world's weirdest. What began with a cult following has grown into a worldwide phenomenon, and some would even say, a movement. Now, in their latest project, Dylan and Joshua, along with their associate editor, Ella Morton, have put together a new book containing 700 of the strangest and most curious places on Earth. It's called Atlas Obscura, An Explorer's Guide to the World's Hidden Wonders. Today, Dylan Thuris, the co-founder and creative director, will come on the podcast to talk about some of the weirdest and most amazing places and people they've discovered, like a doggy suicide bridge in Scotland, a former monk who's built a cathedral in Spain out of found objects, all by himself, with no formal architecture training, and a bar in Canada that will serve you the cocktail of your choice, garnished with a severed human toe. We'll talk about where they get ideas for new entries to the Atlas and how they vet submissions. We'll discuss hipster tourism and why some of the most remarkable finds might be right under your nose. Plus micronations, lake monsters, and why the Statue of Liberty really isn't that big a deal, or at least that big a statue. Coming up with Dylan Thuris of Atlas Obscura in just a moment. Dylan Thuris is the co-founder and creative director at AtlasObscura.com. He's spoken at conferences like South by Southwest and Applied Brilliance about the changing nature of exploration. Previous projects include Curious Expeditions about traveling in Eastern Europe for a year, the meeting of the Athanasius Kircher Society.
It's Athenaeus.
Okay.
It's not an easy one.
And Wonders of the World, a series of videos and articles for Slate. He and his Atlas Obscura cohorts, Joshua Foer and Ella Morton, have finally put together a book called Atlas Obscura, An Explorer's Guide to the World's Hidden Wonders. Dylan, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm psyched to be here.
Well, yeah, first, congratulations on the book. What I love about it is that so often, you know, popular blogs get a book deal, and it's just another way to kind of capitalize on it and get a little bit more money out of it, and they treat it like an afterthought. Not so with this book. You can definitely tell that a lot of love was put into it. The cover art is great. The binding is like this fancy embossed binding, and it's full of color pictures. It's just fantastic. It would make a great gift, by the way, for anyone. I've already ordered for someone's birthday. You put a lot of work into this, I can tell.
That's exactly right. We wanted it to be its own standalone thing. Like, to exist in the world, you could come across it independent of the site and be like, wow, this is amazing. And so to that end, this book, we've been working on this book for 5 years. We wrote every single word in here from the ground up, basically. We started with the site and this database of 10,000 places and started distilling that down, trying to make kind of the purified version. So there's 700 places in this book, and like I said, we wrote everyone from the ground up, and I think that time, that effort, has proven worth it. Really proud of this.
Definitely. Now, I don't want to misrepresent Atlas Obscura as just quirky oddities or Ripley's, believe it or not, because there's so much more to it. There are some amazing ancient ruins and funerary rituals and beautiful natural sites. So for you, how would you define Atlas Obscura for people?
So we call ourselves the guide to the world's hidden wonders. And for us, I think, you know, what we set out to do was to take some of the things that were covered in other places. You know, some of this stuff, there is, you know, some of your roadside attractions, your kind of kitschier stuff, or there is some kind of more like catacombs and you know, things that normally were kind of treated as, you know, spooky, creepy. Like, and the thing is Josh and I, like, we really love and adore these places. And we think they tell us something about what our world is and what's possible in it. So we wanted to treat them with kind of respect. And so it can be difficult to define. Sometimes I say, what's an Atlas place? Well, it's like, it's both a 200-foot wide flaming hole in the Turkmenistan desert. That's definitely an Atlas place.
I love that.
But it's also, you know, something around the corner from you. It's the Tesla coil at the Griffith Park Observatory. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of it. The idea here is not just that there's this crazy stuff, you know, far flung. And if you go into the jungles of the Amazon, you find, you know, the abandoned Fordlandia town. That's there. And that's great. But the point is actually, you know, this stuff can be 5 miles away from you. It's a way of sort of looking for untold stories and starting to realize that the world all around us is more weird and wondrous and magical than I think most of us give it credit for.
Yeah, and that's interesting that you say that part of the goal is to open people's eyes to what's in their own backyard, because a lot of these things are in places like Chicago or Philadelphia or right here in LA.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something, wherever you are, there is probably something totally incredible within, I'm going to give myself some generous, within a 1 hour's drive of you, there's probably something that will really knock your socks off. And it's, you know, one of my favorite pieces of feedback we get on the book and on the site is people say, you know, I've lived here for 20 years and I have never heard of this thing. And then I went there and it was amazing. And like, that's, you know, part of this whole thing, the book, the site, it's all a nudge to remind people that the world is out there. Like, it's like, you know, it's, we love having people come read the stories in the site. We love, you know, the book is a great way to sort of open to a page and say, wow, I this is really wild. I can't believe, you know, maybe it gives you some inspiration. But hopefully at the end of all of that, whether it's, you know, whether it's around the block or it's in Turkmenistan, we help you kind of, we give you that little push to actually start going and exploring. Because once you start to do that, the world sort of opens up. It starts, you kind of start going, okay, this is a thing I can do with myself, like with my days. And it's a nice, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like that's especially important these days because it does kind of seem like we're cocooning too much, like we're starting to retreat to within our own borders and not wanting to explore, not wanting to engage with someone on the other side of the planet.
Yeah, and I think we all live in such heavily mediated worlds now. We live in our phones, we live in Netflix, we live in our computers. That's part of the modern world. But the modern world is also the world all around us. And if we can use, I think for me, if I can use those same tools, if I can use our website, if I can use the phone, you know, and this book to basically help remind people, they can go and have real experiences. And at the end of the day, you know, the thing that you want to talk about, the thing you remember, I think, is when you've had an experience in the world that was strange and memorable and outside of your normal existence. My co-author and co-founder Josh has a quote from a previous project he worked on that says, monotony collapses time, novelty expands it.
Huh.
And I think that's part of what we're trying to capture. Once you start treating your world, even your neighborhood, as a novel place and starting to dig into whether it's its history or these little things, suddenly the geography, you know, a neighborhood that you walked through and didn't see, it comes alive and you're suddenly living in this much deeper, richer place. And I think that's sort of what we want to do because it's, you know, travel happens in two dimensions. It's both going to a place, you know, it's both sort of the physical act of traveling, whether that's short or long. And then it happens in the dimension of depth and context and understanding, right? Because it's all too often people go on these trips. They sort of do the things they think they're supposed to do, but
right,
they don't
check off the list.
They don't.
Which is why I hate the term bucket list, by the
way. I kind of do too. I have to, you know, people say, is this bucket list stuff? And I sort of go, yeah, if you're like a weirdo like us, it is. But I agree. It's not about checking stuff off. It's about trying to give yourself a rich experience in place, time, and history.
Yeah. So many people treat travel as just trying to fill their Instagram wall.
Yeah.
You know, just click a picture, and they don't live in the moment and actually enjoy the experience. I love that this does encourage people to embrace curiosity and kind of have a sense of childlike wonder again. I'm the kind of guy who it's like walking somewhere, I never pass up a historical marker.
Always read the plaque.
Always read the plaque, because you never know what kind of history there was. Yeah. You know, I just down the street from here, I'll be walking around, I'll like, oh, this little alley used to be Chinatown 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, I want to give people some more examples of kind of the stuff that Atlas Obscura covers, just so they have some kind of a reference point. You mentioned, of course, the door to hell in Turkmenistan. What is that?
So that maybe if there was a mascot for Atlas Obscura, it might be that. I remember when I first found out about this, and I could not believe that I had never heard of it, that it wasn't like. So in 1971, a Soviet drilling team went out to Turkmenistan to find natural gas. And they found it. There's a bunch there under the desert. So they set up their rig, and then there was an accident. And as their rig punched through the like crust of the desert, it created this massive hole. This like sudden sinkhole opened up. The whole rig fell in, and there was suddenly this 200-foot hole in the desert that was now leaking deadly natural gas. So, you know, it's 1971, Soviet petroleum geologists, they did what I think they probably thought was like the reasonable thing. They lit the hole on fire. Presumably, they thought it would burn for a few weeks.
That sounds like typical Soviet central engineering.
Totally.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's an elegant solution to the problem. However, 45 years later, it is still on fire. So there is this giant burning hole in the desert of Turkmenistan. There's like nothing around for 5 hours. And at night, you drive up to this thing, and it almost looks like a memorial light. You know, it's like this beam of light shooting out. And supposedly, and I really want like an entomologist to come and fact check this, but the lore, the word on the street is that the local spiders are attracted by the light and heat and fling themselves into the gates of hell or door to hell, which kind of is like just one little extra.
Yeah, I love that. It's the spider suicide bridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that reminds me, isn't there, I think in Scotland, there's something called the suicide bridge for dogs,
yeah,
where dogs just fling themselves off into a gorge or something?
The Overton Bridge. Not only do dogs fling themselves off of this, I mean, don't take your dog here. Okay, quite literally, do not do it. Because people have taken their dog here, their dog has leaped, been okay, and then gone and done it again. The reason behind it's like a little unclear. They think maybe
there are a lot of cats at the
bottom, nesting minks or something.
Oh, okay.
Something about that plus like the visual geography of it confuse. Anyway, these multiple dogs, dozens of dogs have just will run and do a flying leap off of this bridge, and they don't. You know, many make it, but some don't. So it's like It's a very strange place.
Yeah, and you know, kind of along the hell line here, there's also, I guess, I'm not sure where this was, but somewhere there are several Buddhist hell-themed theme parks.
Throughout Southeast Asia, actually. There's a lot more than you would think. There's a number of them. And people don't realize that there's a Buddhist version of hell. It doesn't quite fit with what you're...
Yeah, I never knew that.
But the Buddhist version of hell is brutal. And so in these theme parks, there are all of these kind of homemade sculptures of, you know, people in the boiling blood pits and like being ripped apart by the giants. And you're like, wow, Buddhism, this is not a thing I thought was part of, but it's very much, it's there. And I don't know enough about
the height requirement to get into these theme parks.
I suspect not, actually. Yeah, I think it's probably, you can probably just breathe right in.
Toddlers and everything.
Yeah. I would not bring a kid here. They are very scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one of my favorites in here was the Necropants of Iceland.
Yeah.
What is this? They flay the skin off of a corpse, presumably of a loved one, and make pants out of them for good luck, right?
So we're on this is like a good October Halloween-y vibe we're doing here. So, kind of touching on another one of our sort of more macabre entries, the Icelandic Museum of Witchcraft and Sorcery collects these books of staves and spells and all of this stuff. And in one of these books, there is a sort of a recipe, a spell for necropants. And it's exactly as you said, which you have a friend, you need a friend probably be a good friend. And you say, hey, friend, when you die, can I flay you from the waist down? I'm going to make a nice pair of trousers out of your skin.
Okay.
And then you don the pants, you wear them, you put them on, and you need a coin from a poor widow, which just feels like unnecessarily cruel. But that's what the spell calls for. And you put the coin in the let's call it the pocket.
Okay. And a gender specific pocket.
Yes.
Okay.
And then they attract wealth and the coins multiply.
Okay.
And you become lucky and rich. And
wow.
And there's a very specific instruction for how you pass on the necro pants, which is basically someone has to be wearing them at all times. So you step out of one leg, the next person steps into the other leg, and then they can
Oh, wow. Does it give you advice on how to broach this subject with a friend? Like, how do you bring that up?
Like,
or
I think
do you
it's
check it off on your donor card?
A couple beers in, you say, so, you know, hey, bud.
Yeah. Well, where do you get the leads for Atlas Obscura? Are they crowdsourced from fans of the website?
They are. So when we started this, we knew that was the only way this could ever work. Because a lot of these places, you know, they're the kinds of place that you only know about because you grew up a mile away from the guy who is building the castle in his backyard and has been doing it for 20 years. The whole thing really relies on this far-flung group of explorers. And again, that can mean just a curious person going around their city asking questions, looking into they read a plaque that has some unusual thing on it, and then they look into it and they go, oh my God, this is actually incredible. And then they send that in. And honestly, after 7 years, we still get stuff sent to us that we're like, how in the world have we never heard of this? Like, that is crazy. Yeah. So
it must be so fun. Now, how do you vet these? Have you ever just shown up and then there's nothing there, or it's, you know, like one of these overhyped billboards that you might see along some road in the Midwest, you know, come see the thing.
And south of the border, you know,
it's someone's well in their backyard or something. The pit to hell.
Yeah. I would like that, though, actually. I would. Yeah, so it works in a few ways. First off, a little bit, it helps that users submit, you know, so people send in their photos, they send in their experiences. Then we have an editorial team that does fact checking. And if we can, we'll see if we can get someone else to go check it out. Otherwise, we call people, we read multiple sources. We just try and make sure that whatever the user has said sort of adds up, checks out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if we get something wrong, which occasionally we do, someone can make a correction. They can come to the site and edit a place and be like, hey, I went here and actually, you know, what you need to do is like go down the alley and around the back.
Like, oh, okay. You so have it's like the Wikipedia edits.
It has that aspect. Okay. And so we have to think of it as like a slightly more highly curated Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Where like we sort of approve everything. We have to approve the edits. But we do rely on users to help us make sure we're getting it right, because it's a big world.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll talk more with Dylan Thuris of Atlas Obscura when we come back in just a moment. Hey, folks. Do you like reading but find it's getting harder and harder to make time to curl up with a good book? Well, there's a solution. Give audiobooks a try. They're perfect for your commute to work or working out at the gym, a relaxing bath, or any time, really. And right now, you can take an audiobook for a spin with a special promotion just for our listeners from Audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews to get a free 30-day trial and download any of Audible's 180,000 titles entirely for free. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show. When you're dealing with some of these more far-flung places and, you know, say, indigenous tribes, do you ever encounter a community or individuals who want their little piece of Obscura to remain obscure? They don't want the publicity?
Yeah, so we sort of, you know, we have our own version of the Hippocratic Oath. Like, we want to do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we try and be really clear. Like, so take, for example, the idea of sort of isolated tribes. Like, some of what Atlas Obscura is for, it's not a travel guide like Lonely Planet is. Like, it's not go do all of these things. These are not actually things you're going to check off. You're not going to check all of these off your bucket list. And some of them, it's very specifically, it's interesting and helpful. Like, the Sentinelese, which is one of these sort of last kind of uncontacted tribes on an island off of the coast of India, you know, we don't. No, people shouldn't go there. Like, they should remain uncontacted. It's very important for their well-being and their continued existence. But for the most part, what we find, you know, with that sort of caveat about that, a lot of these places, what we find is we were worried when we started the site, like, were we gonna ruin these places? Basically, you know, we're going to take the magic out of them because now they're going to be flooded with people, and it's going to be like, oh, this is the worst. This used to be cool.
All these tourists.
What we found over and over and over again is these are the kinds of places that are fragile in the sense that they disappear from being underloved, not from being overloved. So the tiny crochet museum closes its doors because not enough people come in and give the $5 donation that they need to sort of stay open, or the outsider art project gets bulldozed because there aren't enough people who say this is a masterpiece and we have to figure out a way to keep this. So you know, as we've gone on, whatever little thing we can do, if Alice has done anything of real value, I think helping keep these places in the world is really important to me, and I hope we've helped do that in some small way.
Yeah. Now, you guys are based in Brooklyn, and you know, the moment you mention anything that's kind of oddball or obscure, somewhere in Brooklyn, a hipster's ears are going to tingle. Where does Atlas Obscura stand on hipsterism?
We've been accused of it before.
Oh.
We have. Or someone once a long time ago in a New Yorker piece, they called us for a post-Wes Anderson generation. I don't totally know what that means.
I don't know that that's a bad thing, actually.
I'm not sure it is either. I'm just a little. So my thing is, like, it's about engaging with the world. Like, you know, hipsterism, schmipsterism, like, it can be a lot of different stuff, right? If you are actively engaging in the world in your skill and your craft, if you are earnestly kind of being curious and open, like, that's a good thing. And it can fall under whatever rubric or guise you want to call it, because that's just human curiosity at work. And it's very – we're not snark. We don't do snark. Like, that's the thing that I don't do. Like, I do –
it seems to be done out of love.
It is. And it's like an earnest joy in celebrating these places. So you can call it hipsterism if you want. But as long as you're not doing it ironically –
yeah,
we are not going to these places ironically. We are going to these places in deep joy that these are part of our world.
Well, then that brings up another point. Along those lines, do you ever encounter people who are maybe trying a little too hard to get on the site? They're like, look how weird and ironic we are. We have a mustache museum in the back of a tiki bar in Silver Lake, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Or like, sir, that is just a Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
Sometimes we give a pretty close eye, especially to restaurants and hotels, commercial ventures, where we are sort of saying, you know, like, it's not enough to have some wacky stuff on your walls. Like, you've got to have a real story. You've got to have historical context, you know. So I don't know that we've come across someone. I've yet to see someone who's sort of like trying to game the system. Occasionally people will submit stuff that doesn't pass muster for us. Like, I'm sure that hotel is kind of cool and neat, but it's not enough for us. You know what I mean? Like, we need something that it has to meet a certain bar where of wonderment and surprise. And so we sort of, you know, set that bar. But, you know, honestly, if there's a mustache museum in the back of a tiki bar here in Silver Lake, I would take a look at it. Yeah. I'll at least give it a close read.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's funny that we're talking about weird bars, because here in America, we always think that Canada is so boring and nothing ever goes on there. I was surprised at how many funky things there are in Canada. And one of them was this bar that serves what's called the Sour Toe Cocktail. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, there was this roustabout, Captain Dick, who
anyone described as a roustabout named Captain Dick.
So he lives in Dawson City in Yukon. So you're talking northern gold country, the kind of wild west of Canada.
Yeah.
Basically, in doing some of his like gold prospecting and all this, he comes across a mummified human toe in a cabin. And he's a heavy drinker and he's out at the local bar. And he says, why don't we make this a thing? Actually, who knows how that conversation went down exactly?
That's another weird conversation between friends.
Yeah, I ordered his – he wrote an autobiography. He's deceased now, but he wrote an autobiography. It's a very small thing, and I need to read it actually because I would probably get to the core of this. Anyway, so they're sitting there. They say, we're going to put the toe in a drink. The rule is you drink the drink. The toe touches your lips. You're good. So this became the Sour Toe Cocktail, and you could join this club by drinking the drink. The really amazing thing about this story, though, is that they're on toe number 10, mummified toe number 10. Yeah. So they have been lost, and by lost, what I really mean is swallowed.
Where do they find new mummified toes from?
They have put out a call. And they have gotten basic. So some people, someone basically there was a lawnmower accident. The guy's like, well, I'm sending you my toe. Some people have willed them after their death. They say, I'm old. I want to be the Sour Toe Cocktail Toe. So
I'm going to do this.
Tens of
the lower half of my body goes to the necropan.
Yes.
My toe goes to the Sour Toe Cocktail.
I think that's good. I think you have a good plan. Posthumous plan in place. Anyway, so I have yet to join the Sour Toe Cocktail Club, but I would in a heartbeat. If I get out there, I'll do it.
Probably my favorite in here is just these stories of the individual who has this insane obsession / passion for one thing.
Yeah.
One project dedicates their life to creating their masterwork. Like there's a guy who I think he was a postman who found some pretty rocks and then started collecting rocks and building a castle, or a former monk who builds a cathedral out of found objects entirely on their own with no help, no architecture background.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you wish that you had that much passion for anything as some one person has for collecting bottles and building a house out of them or whatever.
Yeah, we really celebrate these folks. And I have had a chance to go to two of these projects. I've been to Don Justo's self-built cathedral outside of Madrid, and I met him. He's now in his late 80s. He might have just turned 90. And he's been doing this for 50 years. And the cathedral is the size of a city block. And so he casts the columns. He uses like big oil drums, fills them with concrete, and then stacks those on top. So the thing I've realized is like basically when you're 20 years old and you say, okay, I'm going to spend the next 50 years of my life doing whatever this thing is. I'm going to dig a cave system with hundreds of caves in it. And
Having a family.
Carve them into, or I'm going to make my family live there. That's a real thing. You can almost accomplish anything if you say this is what I'm going to do with my whole life. There's a castle in Colorado called Bishop Castle that is another one of these things. It's a 16-story tall self-built castle, and it's just astonishing. It's like a national treasure. It really is an incredible place.
Yeah, or there's this guy in New Mexico who has been digging into these salt caves.
Rob Paulette.
Yeah, building these huge rooms and cathedrals, ornate fixtures and whatnot. Amazing stuff.
He's an artist who realized that his medium was caves, which is just like, that's the greatest thing.
And along that same breed of individual, you have a section dedicated to kind of the lone libertarian leaning person who decides to take off to some offshore oil rig or an island or a sandbar in the middle of a river and establish his own government. Do you have a favorite micronation in the world?
Oh, yeah. I have a list two. I'm going to cheat and list two.
Yeah.
So there's the one you mentioned, Sealandia, which is kind of your most iconic micronation because it really was kind of a micronation. That's on this basically floating oil derrick platform way out off the coast of Britain. And basically, they established it as a real country. There was passports. They got attacked. There was a whole struggle, an armed struggle for rule of this micronation. So that's a really good one. And then another one that I find just very endearing, it's maybe more on the kind of like goofy dad side of micronations, is a place called Melosia in outside of Virginia City in Nevada. Nevada.
Nevada.
And basically, his micronation consists of his house and his backyard, but he does it up. I have a passport stamp from him when I visited the micronation. He has stamps. His whole family is involved in the bureaucracy of his micronation. He's been at war with East Germany since the 80s when he was stationed there in the army. This is a lifelong project for him, too. This wasn't a whim. He's been basically working on building his little self-contained country, you know, for most of his adult life. And I like that it's like a family affair. Like his daughter is like, she's like 14 and she's like the head of international relations or whatever. So those are two great ones. But yeah, micronations, I think everyone somewhere inside them wants to make their own micronation.
Probably.
I do. I'm like, yeah, one day.
Where
one
would
day.
You pick?
Oh, God. Well, like an island is always a good one to go with, you know. But I do like, in the Louisiana, the Gulf of Mexico, there are like something like 50,000 abandoned oil rigs, oil derricks.
Wow.
Some of them are small and some of them are really big. And I feel like those are all like waiting for a constellation of an archipelago of micronations.
You know, one of the big revelations I think for me as an American is that, you know, when you look around the world, Statue of Liberty ain't so big, actually.
Oh, God, no. It's a tiny thing, really. Especially off the pedestal, it's like nothing.
Yeah.
Even with the pedestal, it pales in comparison.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite colossus out there?
Oh, well, this is a sideways answer, but I think of it because it's bigger. It is bigger than the Statue of Liberty. It's a sculpture of a squid fighting a whale inside a place called the House on the Rock in Wisconsin. So it's inside the building.
And wasn't that done by a guy who was kind of – it was like his big FU to Frank Lloyd Wright?
That's the mythology of it. It's a great mythology. It's a great story, and it's kind of like it's a bummer. If you look into the nitty-gritty, the facts don't really check out. It's like the dates don't line up. Like he was like nine when that story was spun by his business partner who was famous for winning the World's Greatest Liar Award. So, you know, it raises some doubts. But that said, it is this really strange Frank Lloyd Wright-ish house, which then just kept growing and growing, and whole collections were obtained from other museums and added, and entire rooms were built, and they have these giant self-playing organs and the world's largest carousel with the most diverse set of carousel animals inside the building. It takes like 7 hours to walk through. Neil Gaiman put it in his book American Gods as like the seat of the gods, and he has gone on the record and said, I had to tone it down for the book because no one would believe it if I wrote it as it was.
You dedicate about 2 pages to a map of various lake monsters across the U.S. Now, you know, for me, it always seems like lake monsters are always some variation of Nessie or Ogopogo. But the taxonomy of legendary aquatic beasts apparently is a lot more diverse than we thought.
Yeah, those are my favorite because it's mostly – the vast majority are basically Nessie knockoffs.
Yeah.
But I love that there are so many lakes with sort of some version of this. But then there's like – I like the ones that are like non-aquatic species like Goatman or aquatic lynx is one of like a local lake monster.
Like the cat.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that there's a lynx swimming – a giant aquatic lynx swimming in this lake. I feel
don't
like
– cats hate water
that's
though?
Yeah. I don't know. It's plus – well, that's why it's aquatic. That's why they're important. It's important to note. Yeah. I like the more creative lake monsters.
Well, before we go, I just want to ask about Atlas Obscura Day. You do a whole day full of tours all around the world, I guess. When is that? Is that next year, spring?
It's spring every year. Okay. It'll probably be in May. It's usually around April, May. We don't have a fixed date for it yet. But yeah, so there's a whole part of Atlas Obscura that's all events. So We have chapters in seven cities across the country. There's one here in LA where we take people to tons of places. We do like 16 events a month here in LA.
Okay. Wow.
We have
16 a month. I got
to
do that.
We do a ton of amazing stuff, going out to all kinds, like hikes up. It's now gone, but like hikes up to Murphy's Ranch, which is like abandoned, supposed like a Nazi compound stronghold.
I've heard about that place.
The background of that are also a little sketchy, but So, we have these events chapters here in New York, San Francisco, Chicago, a bunch. And then we have this day that happens all around the world in, 50 countries, all the states, and we have hundreds of events all over. And we basically say, go and do this. Like in the sense where we were saying sort of we want to be this nudge, this is the day where we say, okay, today is the day when you go and you actually, you visit Dapper Cadaver here in LA, which supplies full body horror props, where it's like when you need a zombie that's missing two arms, they've got it and it's perfect. Or wherever, there's a ton of different places, the ruins and Echo
Fun
Park.
Stuff.
That's and now we've
so much to I gotta make my list here for right here in my backyard.
We started also taking people on trips. We're running a bunch of trips to Cuba, to Iceland, to Bulgaria. So we're trying to do it.
Yeah, check it out, people, at atlasobscura.com. And again, the book is called Atlas Obscura, An Explorer's Guide to the World's Hidden Wonders. Dylan, thanks for coming on to talk to me about it.
My pleasure. This was fun. I have a feeling we could have done this for like hours.
We could go and go.
Some other time. I would love to come back sometime.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks. Thanks again to Dylan Thuris for coming on the podcast. You've got to check out atlasobscura.com, folks, for the most unique articles and travel ideas. It's the kind of rabbit hole in which you will love to get lost. There are also 50 fun and quirky Atlas Obscura events and guided tours coming up in 24 cities, including San Francisco, LA, New York, Boston, Philly, Chicago, DC, and more. For the full list and reservations, visit atlasobscura.com. If you enjoyed this episode, I really, really recommend buying Dylan's book, which he co-wrote with his Atlas colleagues, Joshua Forer and Emma Morton. It's called Atlas Obscura, An Explorer's Guide to the World's Hidden Wonders. And it's such a fun book with lots of maps and beautiful color photos. And I'm telling you, it makes a terrific gift. In fact, I've already bought a copy for a friend's birthday. I'll include Amazon links to order in the show notes and on our website at kickassnews.com. Follow Dylan on Twitter at Dylan Thuris, that's spelled DylanThuras. And Atlas Obscura's Twitter account is @Atlas Obscura. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at @KAPolitics. And please be sure to recommend Kickass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.